7 minutes after the hour of 12. As we are high atop Madison Square Garden, gripped in the euphoria of that magnificent comeback victory by the Yankees last night in the stadium against the Houston Astros. We are broadcasting to all of you on 50,000 powerful watts of sound due to the generosity of NJDiet.com, our sponsor. And with that song, it means the return of the Mac Daddy. Dominic Carter is in the house.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon. Go Yankees. Go New York. Oh, that's the Knicks. Go New York. Go New York. Go.
By the way, I've got a little beef with you, Dominic Carter.
Uh-oh. Here we go.
It was 10:30 this morning.
10:30.
I was at One Hogan Square. You've been there probably many times.
Many times.
The entrance to the offices of Cyrus White Shoes Manson, the Manhattan District Attorney.
Yes.
And I was conducting a press conference as the New York State Reform Party chairman.
That's right. You had your news conference this morning.
Right. I was giving my endorsement to Mark Fleetner, who will be a writing candidate. So at least there will be a challenge to the stench that's been left in the offices of Cyrus White Shoes Vance, who would have run unopposed on November 7th. And as I counted the number of reporters who were in attendance, I noticed missing in action was a man that you can see on Fios One every night from 6 to 7 on RN. As he does his commentary and news, I said, where is my kumbarichich, my homeboy, Dominic Carter, with the camera and the microphone? I I'm lens lice. I need my media fix.
Well,
Bob Brown of WABC, he was intrepidly there to cover the story, but not you, Dominic Carter.
Brother Sliwa, I apologize. I was in Newark. At Menendez, the trial of Senator Robert Menendez that's ongoing.
Okay.
Breaking news this morning. Yes. A juror number 10, had to be replaced after his grandfather, passed away. And so I was at the trial this morning, and now I'm here with you. And then I'm going back to the trial. But how did your news conference go?
Oh, man, it was boisterous. So I'm not just endorsing Mark Fleetner, who is a Bernie Altacaca Sanders supporter. So some people are scratching their head. But in between us was a guy from Black Lives Matter endorsing him also.
Uh-oh.
And so the reporters were saying, what? Mark Fleetner, a guy who voted for Bernie the Altacaca Sanders, Black Lives Matter, and Curtis Sliwa all on board to oust Cyrus White Shoes Vance for his corruptive ways, accepting donations from lawyers representing Weinstein, Trump, de Blasio.
But wait a minute. Vance is not the, and I know him well. I've moderated debates with him. He's not the first district attorney to do so.
But he is the most corrupt of all of them because he's accepted money from all of them. Anyway, we'll get to that later on when we discuss the Weinsteins. It's genetic because apparently Brother Bob is also a perv. And we find out that Harvey Weinstein was being given a pass by the guy who owns Madison Square Garden and Radio City Music Hall, Dolan, you know, owner of the Knicks, the Rangers, and the Rockettes. And that Weinstein would go into the dressing room of the Rockettes and perv them with Dolan's permission.
Are you really surprised at any of this? Come on. Now you and I from the streets, having been around politics and the arena of the powerful and almighty all these years, are you really surprised at any of this?
No, because obviously Dolan was feeding the beast, expecting favors from Weinstein in return. He'd let him perv out on his Rockettes, choose any of them to basically come on to and to sexually harass, and then turn a blind eye to it, hoping that Weinstein might bring some of his productions to Radio City Music Hall, to the theater down in Madison Square Garden, or Madison Square Garden itself. But put all of that aside, because as divisive as this morning was, and I was battling those defense attorneys who were online to make donations to Cyrus White Shoes Vance.
But wait a minute.
At One Hogan Plaza.
But wait a minute.
Yes.
Please tell me that you didn't mess with de Blasio this morning. You didn't try and serve him any additional court papers, anything like that.
But I'm going to mess with him now.
You didn't get arrested.
I'm going to mess with him now because all of you fair weather friends out there, all of you who've been so negative about the Yankees, All of you who said, oh, Houston Astros, best hitting team in baseball, there's no way you can overcome the 2-0 playoff lead that they left Houston with as they came back to the house that A-Rod and Jeter built the new Yankee
Stadium.
Wait.
You said what? I heard Jeter, but what was the other part of that?
A-Rod. You know, he's roided up.
Wait. A-Rod. A-Rod.
Yeah, he's roided.
Oh.
A-Rod.
Okay.
So
okay.
Anyway.
Okay.
Last night. Seventh inning, right? It's not looking good for the Yankees.
Down to the final 9 outs.
Right. 4
9 outs.
Zip, and then it's Judge time as he knocks one out of the park.
Real did the rest. Judge hits one into center. A monster shot. His second of the series, and it's 4-1.
Oh, that was magnificent. And as you know, with Aaron Judge, he'll either strike out swinging or looking. Or then hit the big bopper out of there.
But we'll take those odds, right?
Okay.
Those are good odds for New York Yankee
Absolutely.
Fans.
Absolutely, but that only made it 4-1. And as you went into the bottom of the eighth, guess who's up again? It's Judge time. This time he just misses hitting a bopper out of the park.
Here's the 2-2.
Swung on and driven to deep left. It is high. It is far. It is off the wall. Or it came out. Judge holds it second. It was off the wall, a double. The tying run scores. The Yankees have come all the way back to tie the game at 4.
You know, John Sterling oftentimes reminds me of when Phil Rizzuto used to be in the broadcasting booth for the Yankees. And sometimes an infield fly rule would be called by the umpire, and Phil Rizzuto would act like, oh, it's going, it's going, it's high. It's caught in the
in the infield.
No, well, not even in the infield, in the extreme short part of the outfield. But no, that was off the wall. That was a double. And then all of a sudden, the tsunami, the avalanche came. Sanchez, the catcher, who was not behind the plate yesterday because he's had some defensive difficulties of late, was the designated hitter. He hadn't been hitting, but oh man, did he come through in the pinch.
Now the right-handed Giles, a set pitch.
Swung on and line, base hit, right center field in the alley. Didi was running. Judge scores. Here comes Didi. He has got a score. Sanchez, a 2-run double to the gap in right center. One of the greatest rallies I've ever seen.
And that's true. That is absolutely true. The ace of the Houston Astros staff on the mound tonight against Toro Tanaka. Who was magnificent the last time out against Houston Astros, and the stadium is going to be rocking tonight. But you know who's going to be missing in action at the stadium tonight?
Well, one, it's a wrap. It's coming back to the Bronx, to the boogie down Bronx.
Right.
It's a wrap. It's a wrap tonight. The
okay.
Yankees are going to win.
Right.
Okay, but you said someone's missing, and earlier you said you were going to get on de Blasio, so make the connection for me.
So yesterday, your mayor, Comrade Bill de Blasio, not mine. I didn't elect him, and I'm certainly not going to vote for him again.
Why does he have to be my mayor?
Well, because I noticed at your press conferences that you attend, you're always given the ringside seat. You're always given...
I think he's mad at me these days.
First class,
five-star,
shelf treatment.
Mr. Mayor, get over it.
So he's sitting with the Daily News editorial board, and they're asking him, why don't you go to any Yankee games? I mean, come on, go to a Yankee game. Well, first off, he knows if he went, he would get the Bronx cheer big time, like he does on occasion when he goes to Citi Field to watch the Mets. The dope from Park Slope, who wears a number 6 throwback jersey that he claims is in honor, not of any previous Met who wore number 6, but of Rico Petrocelli, because he lionizes. He's just completely enthralled with the Boston Red Sox. And Rico Petrocelli, although he was born and raised in Brooklyn, went to Lafayette High School, actually played shortstop with the Red Sox. Joe Foy from the Bronx, not far from where you grew up, was playing third base at the time, so half of their infield were New Yorkers playing against the Yankees. So he's in love with the Red Sox, and he tells the editorial board of the Daily News, now get this, it's constitutionally impossible for me to root for the Yankees and to be in Yankee Stadium.
Time out.
What the hell does the Constitution have to do with that? Time out.
Are you telling me that the mayor of New York City, Bill de Blasio, in an election year, had the audacity to say to the Daily News editorial board, that he's not down with the Yankees, that he supports the Red Sox?
Not only that, he said it's constitutionally impossible. Out of all the words he could have used, like, hey, you know, I don't want to disrespect Yankee fans because they know I'm a Red Sox fan. I don't want to whore on the victory, you know, because I'm running for re-election, because he would be doing what John Lindsay did to get re-elected, who knew nothing about baseball and all of a sudden became an instant New York Mets fan in 69 with the Miracle Mets taking out the Baltimore Orioles. And that helped him ride to victory and re-election because he was on the float, you know, through the Canyon of Heroes, pretending like he knew all about the Mets. He had gone into the clubhouse, embraced Gil Hodges, the manager at the time, said, yeah, I've been a Mets ever since it came back into existence in 1962 in the Polo Grounds. But, liar.
Curtis, even Hillary Clinton, during the campaign, put on a Yankee cap.
Right, but she never went to Yankee Stadium.
Right, she
never
didn't
saw
go,
a game because she would have been booed.
Okay, but listen, but to communities of color, remember when she said, went on the radio station, she said she carries hot sauce in her bag?
Oh, yeah.
Sort of like Beyonce.
Yeah.
But so at least Hillary was smart enough to say, I've got to be down with the local community. I support the Chicago, which team does she support?
Chicago Cubs.
The Cubs.
National League.
Not the White Sox,
yeah, but she
right?
said she used to listen to New York Yankee games at
right.
night, which would have been impossible
right.
in Chicago.
And those days. It was impossible.
Right, yes. Impossible. So she was a liar. But I will tell you this, ladies and gentlemen. This is what Bill de Blasio, your mayor, told the Daily News editorial board. He said, if the Yankees go on to win the World Series, let's say against the Dodgers, because it's likely they're going to take out the Cubs, they're 3-0 ahead, then I will participate in the parade through the Canyon of Heroes. I will be on a float. I will give them the keys to the city at City Hall. I will be there to embrace them. And I'm asking all of you, this fair weather friend, this Red Sox supporter, ladies and gentlemen, if the Yankees win the World Series, now I know they're going to win, and some of you are doubting Thomas's out there, I understand. But if they actually win and earn the right to go through the Canyon of Heroes and receive the keys to the city at a City Hall ceremony, should the mayor be there, since he's already said constitutionally it's impossible for me to root for this team? 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222.
But explain this to me. You're the mayor of the country's largest city. You're the mayor of New York City. How do you root for the Boston Red Sox?
Well, to be honest with you, at least de Blasio is telling the truth. Bloomberg, who was from Boston, was definitely a Red Sox fan, or he lied to the Yankee fans, claiming
okay,
he was
but,
a Yankee
but,
fan.
Okay, but I flipped that on you. At least Bloomberg was able to fake it.
And Bill Bratton, who I sat next to during a Yankee game, who knew nothing about baseball. The guy knew nothing about sports.
And Bratton is Boston Cubs.
Right. He pledged allegiance to the Boston Red Sox. So at a given time, you had two of the key figures in New York who were Boston Red Sox fans now make it the Trinity, the Troika, the Triumvirate with Bill de Blasio. And that is a shanda. That is a disgrazia. 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222.
He knows the city. Live, local, on it. Curtis Sliwa, 77 WABC.
Money. 1227. And boy, we're giving you an opportunity this week to make some scarol. You take a shot at $1,000 and it happens four times a day. Right here at WABC. Listen for the key words at 9:05 a.m. during Bernie and Sid. Right here at 12:05, me and Dominic. 3:05 during Savage. 6:05 during Mark Levin. Then you text the key word at 62582, and you could be a winner. The new 4K a day contest is on, but it only lasts this week. Just listen, text, and win four times a day. If you need further details, go online at WABCRadio.com. That's WABCRadio.com. But let's go right to the phones, Dominic Carter. First up in the queue is Bill in New Jersey. Welcome to Curtis and Dominic Carter here at WABC. Billy.
Hello, Curtis, and welcome, Dominic.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you.
You know, de Blasio, what a jib-dot-all. You talk about a doofus. If the guy has ever thrown a baseball or a football, he probably throws it like a girl. That's not derogatory, but you know the way they can't get their shoulder into the throw and they just can't throw a ball? That's de Blasio. But unfortunately, there are New Yorkers, and many of them are my friends. I have them living over there. If Charlie Manson were to run on the Democratic ticket, there are many people, including my friends, who would say, oh, you leave Charlie alone, so he made a mistake. We got to vote for him because he's a Democrat. What the hell?
Right, but Bill, I got to tell you, having watched Johnny the evil man, Damon, come over from the evil Red Sox to help the Yankees in center field, he also threw like a girly man. Remember, he used to take him. Jeter would have to run out to a warning track in center field when Damon would throw, because if he'd throw like a little girly man, and then Jeter would have to relay it in, and then all of a sudden there'd be another relay in order to get it to the plate. So, you see, that was probably his hero, Johnny Damon, right?
Okay, but wait a minute. He was only hitting the cutoff man, in fairness.
No, Damon couldn't throw. Oh, and he threw like a girly man. He could hit. He could steal bases.
Hey, listen, we're talking about the Yankees, and you're going to laugh at me, but I want you to explain this to me.
Yes.
You know I'm from the Bronx, from the hood, but I don't understand this part.
Sure.
What exactly, because you said this a few minutes ago, is a dirty water hot dog?
That's a hot dog, you know. The guy who used to sell the hot dogs, you know, he'd come around, he'd have the little stainless steel container,
right.
You know, he'd open it up, you'd see the steam come out. That's a dirty water hot
dog. Okay, I love those hot dogs, but do you know the tradition that my grandmother raised me on? I was raised by my grandmother. She would say, boy, don't you get any of those hot dogs from on the street, because where do they go to the restroom when they need to go to the bathroom?
That's a good point.
And so, but every New Yorker loves those hot dogs.
But,
so you're telling me it has nothing to do with water. It's just called a dirty water hot dog.
Can I pimp off for what your grandmother used to call you? Can I call you boy?
Excuse me?
Look, she did, right?
Excuse me? That's an African-American woman.
Oh, it's your thing. I get it. Okay. Let's go to Dan in Brooklyn. Welcome to Curtis.
Dan,
Dominic,
help us.
Carter
Dan,
here.
Help us, Dan.
Hi, good morning. Good afternoon. How are you? I think that the ceremony should be in the morning, 9 o'clock, and de Blasio anyway won't wake up. So, big deal.
That's true. If you have the parade through the Canyon of Heroes at 9 o'clock in the morning, de Blasio is still cutting Z's because, you know, he's been smoking those fatties all night with his old lady on the back porch of Gracie Mansion.
So you're saying the mayor smokes cigars? You said fatty, so...
Yeah. Well, sure. I'm sure he smokes blunts from time to time, you know, Philly blunts or Dutch Masters, no doubt.
Now, wait a minute. You can't mean the same thing that I'm talking about, because in my background, a blunt, your term, indicates marijuana.
Correct.
So
well, we know the mayor loves.
So you're saying we're talking about the same thing?
Sure, because the mayor loves his kush. He's a kush man. A Hindu Kush man. Not for years. When he was raising his family in Park Slope, the guys who were selling nickel and dime bags on 7th Avenue, you know, Ken Duffy knows them, the hipster millennial central there. De Blasio was like one of their best customers, man. And plus,
but he said,
roll a joint with one hand with those big fingers.
But
Wait,
why are you noticing the size of his fingers?
Well, because big hands.
And what
big
are
fingers.
You really implying? Are we going presidential?
That means big schlong.
Between Rubio
that means
and.
That means a big schlong. Come on, you know
so
what that
Rubio,
means.
So, Rubio, so Senator Rubio and
small
Trump.
Small schlong.
And Trump,
small,
they had it right
schlong,
when they were talking about big hands.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, but wait a minute. I don't have big hands.
Yeah, but you're black.
And so, what does that mean?
Big schlong. You know, hey, look, it's understood, man. Come on.
Wait, I thought we were talking about the Yankees, and now you're talking about what? What are you specifically
weren't
talking
we speaking
about? Because
about,
I'm not following
weren't
you.
Weren't we speaking about Aaron Judge's big stick, big bat? Hey, let's
a
just.
A baseball bat.
Let's just extrapolate
now,
below the navel.
Now, wait, you said I'm black, so that means what?
You got big schlong. Yeah. Hey, look, hey, that's the. Hey, that's a plus. For all the years that white guys have been taken away from black guys, you got us by millimeters.
Really?
Yes. But anyway,
really?
But anyway,
yeah, let's
note,
move on. Let's
on
move
that
on.
Note, let's get our news headlines and updates from Ken
Don't
Duffy.
Don't forget the hot
live local on it. Curtis Lewa.
Curtis Lewa.
77 WABC.
Here in my car, I have to say this of all. I can lock on my doors. It's the only way to live in cars.
12:40 as we continue here. Dominic Carter in the house. Here we go again, Dominic. Andrew Evil Eyes Cuomo, King Cuomo II, the son of Mario Francia Brutta Cuomo, King Cuomo I. announced that he is in partnership with General Motors and an organization called Cruise Automation to put the first autonomous vehicles, a.k.a. driverless vehicles, in the streets of Lower Manhattan in 2018.
Bad idea.
Well, the point is, apparently, the mayor has no knowledge of this because they don't communicate.
At all.
So the mayor is not in favor of driverless cars, a.k.a. autonomous vehicles, and he is protesting, saying, why are you ramming this into Lower Manhattan, which is congested to begin with? Why not try it on any of the state-maintained freeways, like the FDR Drive or the West Side Highway? And Cuomo said, ixnay. Now, they haven't picked up the phone, haven't talked to one another. This is typical for the way they do business between Albany and City Hall. They don't talk. But it now opens up a Pandora's box. Dominic Carter, you who drive around to cover stories for Fios One RN on a regular basis, how would you react if all of a sudden you were in Lower Manhattan, where you cover a lot of stories? Where I was today doing a press conference for Mark Fleetner running against Cyrus Vance as the writing candidate on November 7th in the general election for Manhattan DA. And all of a sudden, you were being surrounded by cars with passengers, but in which there were no drivers.
Number one, it's a scary idea. Number two, it's a bad idea. Not the technology part, but the part about experimenting in the heart of congestion, in the heart of New York City traffic. Go up to where I went to school, Cortland, New York, or Syracuse, or Binghamton, or Albany, or Buffalo, or Middletown, but not the heart of New York City. So, technology's coming. The train already left the station, whether we like it or not. But what do you do when there are so many X factors? What do you do when the young lady is putting on her makeup as she's walking and she's not paying attention and darts out into the street? Or what do you do when the young man from the Bronx darts out in the street? What do you do when the cab driver slams on his brakes in front of you? Are you really telling me that these vehicles, via technology, are going to be able to deal with all of these X factors? I think not.
Or what are you going to do on Hamburger Hill, where there used to be the Burger King across from the Port Authority on 40th and 8th, where a bunch of junkies, dope fiends, you know, because they're getting their methadone and then trading into the street for all kinds of pills and heroin, decide they need some money, and they jump right in front of a car on purpose.
Good point.
To act like they just been hit. They're down on the ground like, you know, Flipper, the dolphin out of water, and they're flipping and flopping around, and then all of a sudden it's a lawsuit, you know, because that's how they make their money. What are you going to do in those kind of situations? And you mentioned Cortland. I would much rather have a cow sort of roaming out into the road get hit by a driverless car as part of the experiment than any of the people that I've just mentioned, because to me, that's crazy. And not only that, believe it or not, I side with Comrade Bill de Blasio on this. Right now, there are more Uber drivers in New York City for the very first time than yellow taxi cab drivers. The first time ever. And then you consider those lime green outer borough cabs and livery cab drivers. And then all of a sudden, the gypsy cab drivers and the black car drivers. What are all these men and women going to do to make money?
And what about the taxi drivers that really don't know how to drive? What about those? What about those?
You think a driverless taxi would be better, right?
No. I'm saying all of the X factors are going to lead to enormous accidents. And to do this in Manhattan, Governor, it's just a bad idea.
Well, let's find out.
But yes. We have to go back, because I want our audience to notice how quick you did this here. You agree with de Blasio. But notice how fast you gloss right past that.
Well, it's a rare occasion that I agree with Comrade Bill de Blasio. So, but on this one, he's spot on against the governor.
So he's right, and you, Curtis Sliwa, you agree with Bill de Blasio.
Oh, absolutely. First off, what are we going to do with the tens of thousands of men and women who earn their income driving people from place to place? And you know what the next extension is. There go the truck drivers who do the, why do you need them? Have a robot, you know, a robot actually make the delivery from the back of the truck while you have a driverless compartment cab up front. And you could be saving a lot of money. And then how are people going to earn money?
I'm sorry. I just don't buy it. It's not going to work. Right, well, I don't buy a robot driving a car in Midtown Manhattan.
Well, let's find out from our many listeners. Are you in favor of what Andrew Evil Eyes Cuomo, King Cuomo II, the son of Mario Faccia Bruta Cuomo, King Cuomo I, wants to do and have driverless cars in Lower Manhattan as an experiment in 2018? Or do you support Comrade Bill de Blasio, who goes, oofa, no to driverless cars? Anyway, let's go to Dan, first up in the queues, calling from Long Island. Welcome to Curtis and Dominic Carter here at WABC. Danny?
Most likely the car's going to have video cameras in front of it and see what it's trying to do. And somebody try to jump in it, he's going to be taken by the video camera saying, oh, he's an asshole.
Yeah, but, you know, what do? You have video cameras in the rear, in the front,
it's gonna be all
on
over the
sides.
It's gonna be maybe a big screen. Like you have it, some guys have it right in their windshield.
Yeah, but, Dan, would you end up getting into a vehicle without a driver?
No, hell no. I don't even trust my wife driving.
You don't trust your wife driving. You're not going to trust a driverless vehicle.
Yeah, not for sure.
Our number is 1-800-848-WABC.
My brain is working at that time.
That's 1-800-848-9222. Let's go to John, who's calling from Staten Island. Welcome to Curtis and Dom here, Johnny.
Hey, Curtis and Dominic. My thing is, there's a scam. There's something with this. Because you're going to tell me that you're going to have, like, 30, 40, 100,000 people, maybe a million drivers across the nation going to go out of a job. I mean, when they had the horse carriages to the cars, who was there to replace their job? So I think there should be a congressional look over to see, before they even start this, how are we going to create the jobs for people losing the jobs first? And number two, does that make Elon Musk, the guy who's going to make these cars, a trillionaire? And then they're going to put all these other car businesses
out of business? It's not just Musk. It's Amazon. It's Uber. All these corporations.
The big 10 trillionaires going to take
it's Zuckerman. Zuckerman also experimenting with this. Remember, they not only want driverless vehicles, they want drones doing all the deliveries. They're going to eliminate jobs. And then what are we going to do? Put everyone on a dole?
You're going to eliminate jobs, but technology cannot handle the variable of New York City traffic and all the X factors that make us the great, as Dinkins used to say, the great mosaic of New York. These cars are not going to be able to handle this.
Why did you have to ruin this segment by mentioning David Dinkins, one of the worst mayors ever in the city of New York?
That's your man, right? Isn't David Dinkins your man?
He's not my homeboy. He's your homeboy. Let's go to George in New Jersey. Welcome to WABC, George.
Hey, how are you guys? I think it's an awful idea to do that experiment in such a busy area with so many jobs created by taxi. My idea of a good experiment is a weekend at Uncle Johnny's, not Lower Manhattan taxi cab.
So, say that again. Your idea is?
Not to do that in such a busy area with so many jobs.
Well, yeah. Well, that's what exactly Dominic said. There are plenty of areas in New York State, and Leave It to Beaver Land, Father Knows Best, Little House on the Prairie, to experiment with that. Anyway, let's go to, I believe it's Bob, who's calling from Sound Beach. Welcome to Curtis and Dominic Carter here on WABC. Bobby?
Hey, Chris. How are you? Hi, Dominic.
Hi, Bob.
As far as this driverless car thing goes, one thing that nobody has brought up is what happens when it starts to snow like hell in the middle of the day.
That's another great point, and it only proves my thesis that this has got to be one of the worst ideas, or at least try this out in a smaller area and then work your way up into Midtown. So it leads me to believe that in this ongoing, never-ending feud between the governor and the mayor, that the governor is pulling another one to mess with de Blasio.
Yeah,
that's what this is all
about. If there's snow or sleet or black ice, you know, it's always black ice.
Why does ice got to be black?
Because it's always the worst kind of ice, black ice.
Why can't it just be ice? Why it has to be black ice?
Because you can't see it. It mixes in with the asphalt, right? You know, it's treacherous.
So we can't come up with another term besides black ice?
Nope. Sorry, you're stuck with it. Anyway, let's go to J.D. in Staten Island. Welcome to WABC, J.D.
Hey, Curtis. So I'm an Uber driver, and I'm hearing all this nonsense about these, cars without a driver. And, yeah, technology is great and all, but the biggest question that nobody's asking is how are these vehicles supposed to respond to a traffic officer directing traffic in the middle of Manhattan when the light turns green and the officer is telling you to stop?
Those vehicles are not built for that. They don't know what hand signal you're giving them. So what are we going to do? Outfit all these officers with little specialized lights to signal the automated cars to go? Give me a break.
That's another great point expressed by J.D. That's a great point.
You know, J.D., the other thing is, one benefit of this is the driverless vehicle is the driverless vehicle will not be giving a hand sign back to the traffic agent, which is usually the middle finger.
Yeah, maybe we could install that in the hood.
Exactly. 1-800-848-WABC. To the phones we go, and it's Jeff in New York. Welcome to Curtis and Dominic Carter here at WABC. Jeff?
Hi, fellas. I was at, last year they had a demonstration over at Rutgers University of one of these cars. It detects stop signs and traffic lights. It won't enter the box if the traffic light's green, unless it can make it through. It's got sensors on all sides so that if anything's coming at it from the side or the back or the front.
Okay, but Jeff, but what happens when the car does not block the box, puts on the brakes, and a New Yorker or a New Jersey resident in Midtown slams into them? Then what?
Well, I don't know if I can accurately answer that for you. But, for instance, if there's an obstruction in the road, like something in the roadway, and they can't tell if it's like garbage or trash or if it's a person or an animal, it'll stop and it'll actually program to call the authorities.
Did you get your answer, Dominic, huh?
Nope.
Curtis Lewa.
The search for common ground begins today.
Founder of the Guardian Angels.
I got distracted. I thought Curtis Sliwa, the Guardian Angels, was over there.
Curtis Sliwa.
There's a guy in a red hat.
Host of The Drive at 5, Curtis Sliwa.
We the people.
He's the New York State Reform Party chairman.
New York radio talk show host.
Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa is here.
He's really a New York City hero.
Yeah.
He's an American hero.
He knows the city. Live, local, on it. Curtis Sliwa, 77 WABC.
Seven minutes after the hour of one, as we're high at Tom Madison Square Garden, the great facilities provided to us for this broadcast by NJDiet.com. Dominic Carter's in the house, the Big Mac Daddy.
Nice to be here with you, man. How are you?
I've had better days.
Why? Why is it always about you've had better days as opposed to living in the moment and being grateful for what we have and what every listener of WABC has?
Well, the reason is this whole he said, she said thing, a battle over a fallen hero in the line of duty.
Very serious topic.
One of four U.S. Marines killed on a mission in Niger a little more than 12 days ago. The president decided to weigh in on that the other day by claiming that, hey, he's the best. He's always reaching out to the families of those who have been lost in battle, more so than Obama did or Bush 43. I thought that was so off the hook, so unnecessary. But now he's dug himself another hole because you have a congresswoman named Frederica Wilson, who's from Florida, who is in the car of the wife of one of the fallen four. She was on her way, in fact, to the airport to retrieve the body. She has two children, pregnant with a third. And the mother of the fallen soldier was also in the car. And apparently at that moment, the president did call to convey his condolences and his support for the family. But the Congresswoman, Frederica Wilson, says that his manner, the way he approached it, what he said, was just not the way a president should have handled that conversation. In fact, let's go to the audio tape.
He was almost like joking. He said, well, I guess you knew something to the fact that he knew what he was getting into when he signed up. But I guess it hurts anyway. You know, just matter-of-factly. That this is what happens. Anyone who is signing up for military duty is signing up to die. And that's the way we interpreted it. And it was horrible. It was insensitive. It was absolutely crazy and unnecessary. I was livid.
So right away, Dominic Carter, I'm somewhat jaded to the congresswoman because she's a hardcore Democrat and they hate Trump. And so I give the benefit of the doubt to the president, A, for making the call, doing what is appropriate for a president to do. But then he decides to punch back. He always punches back. Like, remember the Khan family at the Democratic National Convention.
Like he's threatening with John McCain of Arizona.
Instead of just taking the code of omerta, taking the high road, he tweets back and accuses her, meaning the congresswoman, of fabricating the story. And he claims that he has proof that his version is the correct one.
Right.
The congresswoman then addressed that on CNN.
Well, I don't know what kind of proof he could be talking about. I'm not the only person that was in the car. And I have proof, too. This man is a sick man. He's cold-hearted, and he feels no pity or sympathy for anyone. This is a grieving widow who is 6 months pregnant. This is a young woman. She's only 24 years old. She weighs maybe 110 pounds. And she has two other kids, 2 years old and 6 years old. And when she actually hung up the phone, she looked at me and said, he didn't even know his name. Now, that's the worst part.
And as Marine Johnson, who was lost in the line of duty along with three others, the president then addressed that this morning. So, again, he decided he would punch back. This time, he would do so on camera.
Didn't say what that congresswoman said. Didn't say it at all. She knows it. And she now is not saying it. I did not say what she said. And I'd like her to make the statement again, because I did not say what she said. I had a very nice conversation with the woman, with the wife, who is sounded like a lovely woman. Did not say what the congresswoman said. And most people aren't too surprised to hear that.
What's the move, Mr. President?
Let her make her statement again, and then you'll find out. Okay, let her make her statement again, and then you'll find out.
So this is sounding like Comey, round two.
Exactly. Exactly.
As if he has a tape of that.
Exactly. I'm not taking issue one way or the other with either the congresswoman or with President Trump, but we've been down this road before.
Right.
The president said, based on his private conversation with the FBI director, he tweeted to the effect that Comey better pray that there's not a tape of this.
Right.
And then weeks later, after he threw out the allegation, he admitted that he did not have a copy of it.
This is the problem. As the congresswoman said, there were other people in the car. There obviously is the grieving wife.
Right.
She has not commented. Kawanda Jones Johnson.
But we don't know if the president was on speakerphone at that point. When we hear there are other people in the car, that could be open to interpretation of your responding to the person taking in the call.
But the mother of the slain Marine, Johnson's mother, was in the car. She said they had it on conference so that they could all hear the president talking directly to the widow.
Okay, so then the president has a problem.
And Johnson's mother is saying that not only was she in the car during the call from the White House and the president, but that the president did disrespect her son and my daughter and also me and my husband. This is sounding like the Khan situation all over again.
No doubt about it. No doubt about
it. I just, for the life of me, cannot understand why the president opened up this Pandora's box originally before he made the calls. And I don't fault him for making the calls right away, 12 days later. I don't fault him at all. But he had to somehow respond to critics. But I respond more than Obama and Bush 43 and any other president. Why? Because
You already know why.
Right, because
it's a rhetorical question.
He's always
right.
He's never wrong. Don't attack him. Don't criticize him. And now he puts himself in a box. So now you're going to see a series of interviews where you not only have this congresswoman claiming the president is lying, but you have the mother of the slain Marine claiming she heard the call and the president is lying. Now, if Kawanda Jones Johnson decides to speak, the widow, That's three against one, and the president better have a tape. Because if he doesn't have a tape, it really doesn't look good for him. It looks like he's ganging up on three women. Never looks good.
Not only that, why? Well, you already know why. The president, it seems like he is not understood fully yet that as the president of the United States, every word, every gesture matters. And for the president to go after prior presidents on this, one of the duties, one of the top duties of the office is with dignity and often away from the cameras to reach out to the families of military members that have died while serving their country. And so you don't boast about it and then criticize past presidents.
He has said, well, look at my chief of staff, General Kelly. He lost his son in Afghanistan. He and his wife never received a direct call from the president, although they were at a Gold Star luncheon in which they sat with the president's wife at the time. We didn't hear Kelly say that. Notice, haven't heard anything from Kelly. It's the president using that in defense of him attacking Barack Obama and Bush 43 and other presidents for not attending to their duties as well as he has when we've had fallen soldiers. And you say, why did he stir this up to begin with? Why?
It goes back to my original point. Because the president does not fully understand yet that every word and every gesture
but I think
he utters,
Dominic,
or says means something.
He likes chaos. He likes volatility.
But don't we already understand that from The Apprentice? He loves and stirring up the controversies.
But you don't do it in this situation.
You don't do it at all.
This is a no. You can't win this unless you got a tape. Mr. President, you better have a tape of the conversation. You better release it, because if now the widow says what my mother-in-law said and what the congresswoman said is true, that was his conversation directly to me, that does not sit well.
And let's not forget that there's another variable here that we're not discussing, right? If the congresswoman is to be believed, if President Trump indicated that this is what you sign up for, this is from a man that has never served in the military himself.
I completely recuse the congresswoman because she clearly has a bias here. She clearly has a bias.
Why? And what's the bias?
Well, she's a Democrat.
And that means that she's going to lie on the president of the United States?
Absolutely.
I don't buy that. I don't buy that.
Now, the mother of the slain soldier, no. The wife, no. But the congresswoman, yes. Let's go to Danny in Long Island. Welcome to Curtis and Dominic Carter here at WABC. Danny?
How you doing, guys? It's the saddest day of my life that we're actually politicizing the death of one of our fallen soldiers. But let me before you jump below me, Curtis, if one of your guardian angels, who I used to work with when I was a cop, was killed in the line of duty, and I called you and I said the following: Curtis, a brave guy, they do a rough job, they know what they're getting into, and it's a tragedy when they get killed. It's a hard job, it's a dangerous job, and these guys know where they're going. It really hurts when one of them gets killed. Did I just say something to disrespect you?
No, I would not have taken umbrage to that.
So that is exactly what they said, the president said. This is what they signed up for. Can we have the complete sentence? Can we have the complete paragraph? This is a Democratic congressman who, a private conversation, so now a widow is in mourning and she's got to deal with this? This is a disgrace.
But the problem is the president is now called High Noon. He has said, put your cards on the table.
I got my cards.
And
I
he
read
did
every
this,
article.
I know, but he did this with Comey and he never delivered. You can't keep crying wolf. Okay, eventually, if you're going to challenge your accusers because you say it again and I'm going to prove to you that you're wrong, you better deliver the proof.
Danny, let me ask you this question. Let's get real here. First of all, thank you for your service as a police officer. I think you said that you were a police officer or are a police officer. So one, we thank you for that. But number two, so let's say your only son goes off to the military And unfortunately, your son is killed in the line of duty on fighting for his country. You're telling me it's going to be okay if the president calls you and says this is what your son signed up for?
Again, actually, my son is on patrol right now in the city of New York. And if you said to me, your son was a very brave man, he knew it, and you're taking it out of context, and I say, yeah, my son knew what he was getting into. He volunteered for that. And he went down fighting, and it hurts. There's nothing disrespectful about that. Just like a guardian angel knew what he was getting into, a cop, anyway. We know what we're getting into.
Danny, from a president that had several deferments when it comes to military service?
I would give him the benefit of the doubt on this, Dominic.
You would give who? Trump?
Trump, yes.
I don't see how you can give him the benefit of the doubt.
Because
he stepped in it, and now he has to own it. It's as simple as that.
He stepped in it by saying, I have proof. Now he's got to show his proof. You never did that with Comey.
But even if the president has proof, let's buy into your argument.
Yes.
He has still offended a family that just lost their child.
But if in fact there is proof, if there is an audio recording, let's see in the context of the whole discussion how that particular drop was said. I give the benefit of the doubt to the president on this. Let's go to Kathy on Long Island. Welcome to Curtis and Dominic Carter here on WABC. Kath?
Yes, hi. I'm not a Trump fan, but I think this is ridiculous. She's just looking for publicity for herself, for her own name, because he was saying that he was a brave man, that he signed up because he's brave and he's... I didn't know this. The call before would say what I was holding on for. He's not a politician, so they didn't say the exact words, but everybody knows that's what he meant. He wasn't insulting him. He said he's brave, and he feels bad about it.
But Kathy, how many times are we going to make an excuse for this president to say... to allude to, well, it didn't come out right. He's not a politician, but we all know what he meant to say.
Would you give
Obama the same benefit of the doubt? Would you give Obama the same benefit of the doubt?
Yes, everybody did. Everybody gave him. I know everyone gave him benefit of the doubt, no matter what.
Well, the difference is, and you know this, Dominic.
Than Hillary Clinton, who's a crook.
You know how this is different. I am sure that when Barack Obama did this, which is a very difficult task, Bush 43, Bush 41, Clinton, is that they had a little index card given to them by the chief of staff.
Of course. Every president
the main
has
points.
The card.
And they, you know, obviously they extrapolate
and
on
sometimes
that.
It doesn't go well.
Right.
Sometimes loved ones will completely flip on a mayor. Yep. I've seen it
exactly.
when it happens to mayors.
Exactly.
Where they will literally curse out the mayor or a president.
There's
and
no
the
doubt.
President must still remain dignified and with tremendous class to handle the situation.
Exactly. Exactly. But the president in this case opened up the Pandora's box by criticizing previous presidents unnecessarily for things that they supposedly didn't do that he had no knowledge of, but was coming. I heard from the generals. It's like, unless you know it for sure, shut up, because you're always doing this and it causes chaos. 1-800-848-WABC.
He knows the city. Live, local, on it. Curtis Lewa, 77 WABC.
To the phones we go. Dominic Carter in the house. It's Jim in Rockland County. Welcome to Curtis and Dominic here at WABC. Jimmy?
Yes, hello. Hello, guys. I have comments. I was in Nam. I served my tour. The thing of it is I don't understand your other callers giving this guy the benefit of a doubt. First of all, he's the one that started this whole conversation because he was trying to rack up points and spewing falsehoods. Now, the congresswoman, what does she have to gain? Trump has to cover his tracks because he didn't do this. He didn't call anybody. Somebody woke him up. When did he do this call? Yesterday? These men were killed 2 weeks ago.
Well, now, we do know that when Chief of Staff General Kelly's son was killed in Afghanistan, President of the United States at that time, Barack Obama, never called him or his wife, although a month later they were invited to a Gold Star luncheon and they sat with Mrs. Obama at a table. I don't think every president has immediately called when servicemen or servicewomen are killed in the line of duty. You're from the era of Vietnam. Do you think LBJ was on the phone there in the White House calling hundreds of parents or wives or boyfriends or girlfriends or husbands about the loss of their loved ones?
Do you know that he didn't?
Oh, LBJ? Yeah, he was talking to his gumadas before he'd be talking to the parents of the dead in Vietnam. I guarantee you that.
LBJ was the more honest person than Nixon.
Are you kidding? It's because of him that 55,000 men died in Vietnam, the Gulf of Tonkin, that never happened. Come on, Jim. Don't be a revisionist. Him, then followed by Nixon with his secret bombing campaign in Laos and Cambodia. He was going to get us out of the war. Are you kidding? 55,000 men died because of that. Jesus Christ.
Are you okay? You're
no.
Turning beet red.
LBJ, who is dropping
okay,
the F-bomb every 2 seconds.
But your blood pressure.
You know,
calm
the only call, down. The only call he was interested in the White
Why
House.
Why are you pointing at me
the
like
The only
that?
Call he was interested in getting in the White House was from his chief of staff telling him that Lady Bird was on his way and he better get his gumada out of the West Wing.
But Brother Sliwa, with your complexion, you're turning beet red. Calm down.
That S-O-B-L-B-J.
Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa.
77 WABC.
.140 as we continue. Dominic Carter in the house. Wouldn't it be great if the President of the United States, Donald Trump, culturally appropriated this classic Sly and the Family Stone called Stand?
I like the song. It's a nice song.
Although it says stand for what you believe, which would go contrary necessarily to the president's message to the NFL, which is regardless of what you personally believe.
But explain to me this culturally appropriated thing.
Well, because Sly and the Family Stone was a brother, you know, from the Bay Area, Oaktown, Oakland.
Right. So why does it have to be culturally appropriate?
It's not my terminology. It's what's politically correct and being said of
late. So that means exactly what?
What that means is it would be a great theme song because the president once again is on the jockstrap of the NFL owners and the NFL players. Because yesterday they had a big grand poobah meeting here in Midtown Manhattan at their headquarters. Roger Goodell in charge. He brought together the union members, some of the selected players, all the owners, and they were going to sit down and hash out this. Okay, are we going to stand? Are we not going to stand? You know, when the national anthem is played at our NFL games. And this is what Roger Goodell said as he came out of the meeting.
Today's discussion with our players was very productive and very important. It reflected, I think, our commitment to work together with our players on issues of social justice. I would tell you that our players are men of great character. They have a very deep understanding and tremendous knowledge of the issues that are going on in all of our communities. Their commitment to addressing these issues is really admirable and something that I think our owners looked at as saying, we want to help support you. Those are issues that affect us. There are issues also. We'd like to do it together.
What? Are you telling them to stand or not to stand, Roger?
We spent today talking about the issues that our players have been trying to bring attention to, about issues in our communities to make our communities better.
Oh.
And I think we all agree there's nothing more important than trying to give back into our communities and make our communities better. That was the entire focus today.
He circle-jerked us. He didn't even answer the question. Bottom line is the NFL, for now, will continue to let players kneel or sit during the national anthem without a penalty. And the president took to his Twitter account this morning to address that. He said, the NFL has decided that it will not force players to stand for the playing of our national anthem. Total disrespect for our great country. Ladies and gentlemen, whose side are you on with this? Roger Goodell, the owners, the players union, they have decided If players want to take a knee, sit on their tuchus, grab their left nut, their right nut, whatever they got below their navel, want to stay in the clubhouse, play pinochle, whatever they want to do.
Excuse me.
Yes.
Excuse me.
Yes.
Aren't we talking about grown men here? Are we talking about 15-year-old boys? Because the last time I checked, those players are grown men. Are grown men that have First Amendment rights. Now, let me be very clear.
Now,
if it was
owners,
me,
the owners have rights too to suspend them.
Okay. If it was me, as I have said before, I would stand out of salute of country. Nothing would come between me and my money. And because I have a family to take care of. And I mean nothing. So I would respect the country and I would stand. But you have to remember, Curtis, and I need our audience to remember, this is bigger than some athlete. Many of these athletes, but by the grace of God, myself included as a journalist, we are of these communities of the issues that they are protesting. So, but by the grace of God, I was able to make it out. These athletes were able to make it out. And so are we supposed to just turn our back on the community?
Okay. So the owners should have said, stand or you get suspended without pay. And then we want to see how many of the brothers would be so principled in the fact that they would be losing money. How many of them would sit it out? How many of them would take a knee when all of a sudden you're taking money out of their bank account? Because now they got their sycophants, toadies, and lackeys, their homeboys who are going to want to get paid every week. They got child support payments because they got families they're juggling. Many of these ball players have four, five, six women that they have children with. And, you know, child support, they want that money or they're going to put you in jail. So let's see if those players believe in the principle and are willing to sacrifice money. I haven't seen that yet. And the owners, they dropped the ball on it yesterday because they could have easily said, okay, we're going to suspend you without pay if you take a knee, if you don't stand and show respect during the national anthem. But they refused to do that. They gave some mumble-jumble about how they're going to support community programs that the ball players are involved
with. The reason why they refused to do that, these guys are not kids on some high school football field. These are grown men that happen to be millionaires. They're millionaire athletes. So you're going to just do away with their First Amendment right?
No, they have a First Amendment right, but there are consequences for your actions.
And remember, I told you before, there is tremendous pressure in the black community, from the community, when you've made it out. And the pressure is, I'm not saying that they should continue to take a knee. My point is they have a right to take a knee.
Well, let me ask you a question.
If they decide to do it.
Let me ask you a question, because you told us the last time you joined us here that you were blackballed by African Americans.
Not blackballed, but there was pressure. I felt the pressure.
Because you came in with your Joe Namath throwback New York Jets jersey.
You're setting me up. You're trying to set me up.
Oh, you were whiteballed. You were whiteballed.
It was Revis.
Revis.
I faced pressure from other African Americans.
Yes.
And the argument went like this. Brother Carter, how could you, of all people, go to an NFL game under these circumstances?
You still have that Darrell Revis throwback jersey? Was it a New England Patriot jersey or was it a Jet jersey?
A Jet jersey.
Okay.
But you have to give my man Brady credit. He can ball.
Oh, no, man. Let me tell you something.
Oh, you going to hate on Tom Brady now?
No. I'm hating on the Zebras who stole the victory right out of the arms of the New York Jets against the Brady Bunch and Coach Belichick. Anyway, our number is 1-800-848-WABC. Let's go, if we can, to Matt, who's calling from New Jersey. Welcome to Curtis and Dominic Carter here. Matt?
Yeah, hey, guys. How you doing?
Hi, Matt.
Hey, Dominic. You know, I'm sick and tired of hearing this. They have the right to do it. The same way they have the right to do it, the owners, the NFL, have the right to suspend them, to fire them. I mean, they're paying them big money.
Okay, Matt, wait, Matt, we're going to give you your say, but I want to ask you this.
Sure.
If you're paying, let's say, an athlete $100 million, right?
Okay.
Now, we all know if you're paying that athlete $100 million, he's probably making you $600 million. So you're going to just lose your product that's making your money sixfold on some on what some consider nonsense?
It's not nonsense. It's offensive to the country.
I agree with that. I understand that.
The same way the owners can tell them what uniform to wear, they can tell them what they're going to do during the national anthem.
So you're telling me, Matt, that these athletes who happen to look majority like me, not all of them, that they have no rights because the owners are paying them millions. Is that what you're telling me?
I'm telling you that they have no right to offend the United States of America nor its flag.
Well, I respect that part of it, because like I said, if it was me, I'm standing. I'm standing out of respect for country, and that's the way I raise my kids. I'm standing because I want to get my paycheck.
Now,
I mean, I can't be any more simple than that.
This is the same Roger Goodell in the aftermath of the carnage that took place. Remember when the Black Lives Matter protests took place in Dallas? And that crazed gunman just started shooting and capping cops from all directions. The Dallas Cowboys, Jerry Jones, the owner, said, we want to put a little logo on our helmet in solidarity with the five dead Dallas police officers. Roger Goodell said, you can't do that. That's a violation of league rules. Now, there is a league rule that you're supposed to stand for the national anthem. So they void that rule, but to show solidarity with dead cops, Jerry Jones and the Dallas Cowboys were told there would be severe recriminations if you put those logos on your helmets when you play your next game. Now, explain that to me.
I'm with you. I feel that those police officers in Dallas should have definitely been honored. They should continue to be honored. We should never forget the sacrifice that they made. I sympathize with the point. And again, it comes to me. I'm standing, Curtis. I don't have a problem with that, with saluting the national anthem.
Although,
But I have to respect my fellow brothers that say they're going to stand up for something.
Okay. Let them defy the league rules, because there is a rule already in place. Get them suspended. Let the union fight the suspension.
Right, that's all that's going to happen.
Of
it's going to go to court.
But then eventually they may have to pay a fine, and they'll lose valuable money. And let's see how committed to the principle they are then when they lose money.
So I want to make sure I got this right. I understand the bigger mainstream community. But to the black community, these superstar athletes are supposed to say, oh, I made it from the community, but I don't have anything else to do with you anymore. I don't care if you're killed by police officers. I don't care about your financial situation or injustices that are done every day. I made it out, me and my family.
And how come so many of them have left the hood and married white women, live out and leave it to Beaverland, and haven't seen the hood in a month or Sunday?
Let's leave the white woman thing alone.
No,
the reason I'm not even going to say what my position is on that.
Yeah, well, I opened
you already
up the
Pandora's
know
the race. Box. You already know the race of my wife.
Because they only
can, you already know that my wife. You already know that my wife is from the
I
hood.
Understood that.
She's from Harlem. She's a strong
African
American.
How many of these NFL players we identify with the hood that they abandoned long ago by taking a knee for the national anthem? 1-800-848-WABC.
Tune in this and every Sunday at 7 a.m. for Katz's Corner, hosted by Dr. Aaron Katz, giving you straight talk about your health. That's Katz's Corner, Sundays at 7 a.m.
To the phones we go. Dominic Carter in the house, and it's Vinny in Long Island. Welcome to WABC, Vinny.
Hey, Curtis. Hey, Dominic. I just want to say two things, actually. Dominic, you keep saying that these players' constitutional right is violated if they're not allowed to kneel. The Constitution protects them from the government, not from their employer. You know that, and everybody knows that. I don't know why you keep saying that.
Well, Vinny, what the point that I'm trying to make to you is real simple, that these owners cannot force them on the sideline. You may feel contrary to okay, because one, the union's going to, their players' union is going to go into court. This is going to be resolved in federal court. It's going to be some time. It's not going to be resolved immediately.
All right, but in that case, the employer, though, does have the right. Like, when you come here to work here,
they can
WABC
try.
Or me.
Right.
And we can opt out.
Right.
And they can suspend
right.
us and they can fire us.
Right. Make no mistake about it. Whatever I'm told to do, Dominic Carter, by my employer, I'm going to do.
Anything?
Just about.
Well, can we go through the laundry list?
Curtis Sliwa.
Boom!
The search for common ground begins today.
Founder of the Guardian Angels.
I got distracted. I thought Curtis Sliwa from the Guardian Angels was over there.
Curtis Sliwa.
There's a guy in a red hat.
Host of The Drive at 5, Curtis Sliwa.
We the people.
He's the New York State Reform Party chairman.
New York radio talk show host.
Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa is here.
He's really a New York City hero.
Yeah.
He's an American hero.
He knows the city. Live, local, on it. Curtis Sliwa, 77 WABC.
Seven minutes after the hour or two, as we are high atop Madison Square Garden, the great facilities provided to us for this broadcast by NJDiet.com. It's Dominic Carter, Mac Daddy in the house. And Dominic, I have noticed a plethora of news accounts of female teachers all over our country, and especially in our tri-state area, who have been busted of late for having sex with male students of theirs.
Uh-oh.
And are getting hit with, like, real serious time, 5, 10, 15 years in the slammer. Some of them single women with children or married, you know, with their spouse at home, who was not necessarily aware of what was going on after school or during school. But in many of these cases, I think back to when I was growing up and going through the school process, and I'm saying, back then...
Now, be careful.
Many of these cases would never have seen the light of day. I want to give you an example.
Okay, wait. Let's be honest. Come on, Curtis. Let's be honest. We both know when we were in school, you might hear of one type of possible alleged situation. Correct or not?
Yeah, I heard about three when I was going to public school.
You see? So this is nothing new. But we're talking about, at the end of the day, I'm going to let you set this up, but we're talking about an adult having sex with a minor.
Mm-hmm.
Period.
All right, so in your mind, it's the equivalent of a male teacher having sex with a female student. Same ramifications.
It should be. It often is not. It's often a double standard where sometimes men are able to wiggle out of the situation and not face as hard time as these women have been receiving as of late.
And I mean, these women are starting to receive really hard time. And I'm saying to myself, okay, there's no doubt they have some kind of mental impairment. But is jail going to be the best place for them? They got kids. The kids have to be raised. Who's going to be taking care of the kids? Secondarily, you look at this case in California of a high school teacher who was having sex with an underage student. He throws it on Instagram. He's bragging with his friends. They're like partying hardy. He's using all kinds of terminology. Yeah, bro, I'm getting into deep, and then I can't use the rest of the terminology. And yeah, we've even had threesomes for the past couple of weeks at her house. Man, this is the best. This is great. And I've been told that these young men, in many instances, are damaged. And I'm sure some of them are. I'm sure you got to take it case by case.
Well, it depends on how you're defining damaged in this aspect.
Well, meaning...
Mentally?
Mentally impaired. They're suffering as a result of this. The abuse.
Come on.
But I don't see that.
Curtis.
I don't see that.
Have
in
you
instances.
Ever seen, I may get in trouble for this, have you ever seen a male that's, quote, damaged from having a sexual encounter
no.
with a teacher?
No.
That's nonsense. That's spin for lawyers to get paid.
Right. In three of the cases that I knew of in growing up, one in junior high school, Builder C Junior High School, and the other in high school, it was briefly there at Canarsie High School after the Jesuits shined their boots on my backside and kicked me to the curb. I was aware of two in a high school situation. The guys were bragging about it, high-fiving about it. You know,
so wait. You said it happened. This happened This while was you in a Catholic high school?
No, no. I'd say when I was transferred few months to Canarsie High School, public school.
Okay, because when I was at Cardinal Hayes, the only woman for a year as a freshman, the only woman in the entire school that all of us could remember, and after a while she started looking great, was the librarian. She was. They were all Catholic brothers. And so we didn't see anyone.
You know, Catholic brothers were, you know, having sex with some of the kids.
I'm not going there. I didn't witness any of that.
Well, you know that's true at Cardinal Hayes.
I'm not going there.
In fact, I think it was either the headmaster or the prefect of discipline who was charged with that.
Move on.
But anyway, I want to ask a general question to the audience. As these women, and I'll use this term, are getting banged out in the criminal justice system.
Bad term.
With serious terms, 5, 7, 9, 10, 15 years in jail for having sex with a male student or a series of male students. Is this the right way to go? Are these young men really being damaged? I don't remember any young men being damaged when I went to school. I'm not suggesting that all are, you know, high-fiving and they're celebrating because they had sex with an adult teacher.
But the same thing is happening with female correction officers. Let's cut through the situation here. We're talking about something that's about control. That's why these types of situations generally happen. And so if we're talking about the woman that worked up at the prison where the two guys convinced her recently with the governor, went to the prison after they escaped, she's in prison right now as we speak.
Understood. But there you're dealing with adults and adults.
That's true.
All right.
That's true.
In this situation, what I'd like to do is just keep the blinders on about schools taking advantage of your students. In one case here, down in Georgia, it's a woman who's going to jail for having sex with an 18-year-old student of hers in high school. And I'm saying in Georgia, you can probably get married at the age of 12, right? And all of a sudden, you're now going to go to jail because you're having sex as a female teacher with
Curtis,
an 18-year-old high school student. They're looking to give her 12 years.
But Curtis, Georgia is the same state where there was an athlete in high school, and the girl happened to be 16 years old, and this kid lost his chance to play college ball. He got
that.
It back after prison.
Right.
Oprah championed his. Now, this was an 18-year-old having sex with a 16-year-old boy,
right.
A 16-year-old girl. He went to prison.
Well, let me find out from our many listeners out there, because I'm looking at this, a plethora of cases all over the country of female teachers who have been arrested, have been charged, have been found guilty, and they're getting really serious time now. And they're leaving behind children. They're not often leaving behind husbands who can take care of the children. Many of them are single female teachers with families.
Are you suggesting that the court system, and this has happened to several correction officers, but are you, that happen to be female, are you suggesting that the system is supposed to look the other way because it's a woman?
I'm saying, Dominic,
primarily she's supposed to take care of the family?
They have to look at
she wasn't taking care of the family when she was laying down having sex
with that
student.
When the young men are bragging about it.
But kids are going to brag.
And they haven't been damaged. And they're actually extolling the virtues of doing this. Are you going to give the woman 5 years?
But who's going to decide?
How about giving her some mental health in terms of dealing with whatever she's impaired that would make her want to have sex with one of her students?
I agree
instead
with
of throwing her in a lockup.
I agree with you on that. But then we have to open the can of worms of what's wrong with your marriage? How come you don't want your husband? How come your husband don't want you?
Why are you having sex with a minor?
Maybe you're turned on by this young buck.
To avoid doing 5, 10, 15 years of hard time in a woman's prison?
But the average person would say, or should say, that you should have thought about that before you
had sex. Let's go to the phones on that. 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. I'm thinking of three teachers who didn't get charged when I went to school, who would have been in prison, and they were great teachers. I got to tell you, they were really good teachers.
Were they great teachers, or they were just very attractive?
No, they actually weren't attractive. They were sort of like a little frumpy, like housefrau looking, but very good in terms of their personalities and conveying to the students Two of them were involved in English literature. I remember, actually, they made the subject interesting to me, which other teachers hadn't been able to do. And the other
teachers have a way of doing that for male students.
And I've had sexy female teachers, but these three that I know of that had sex with male students of theirs were not at all sexy. 1-800-848-WABC. Let's go to Ryan, who's calling from New Jersey. Welcome to Curtis and Dominic Carter here on WABC. Ryan.
Hey, fellas. How you doing today? Listen, Curtis, normally I agree with you on a plethora of topics, brother, but I think on this case you need to stop looking at this through the lens of gender. I think we're not talking about male versus female in any situation. We're talking about an adult and a minor betraying a position of trust and authority. And you have to deter this sort of behavior with extremely strong penalties, because if you start getting lenient, it's only going to grow.
No, I didn't say lenient, but obviously there's a mental health issue here.
I don't buy that. Yeah, everybody who touches a kid is mentally ill, and they all need to be in jail and potentially castrated. There is no psychologist that's going to talk you out of diddling a kid.
Ryan, what are you going to do? What are you going to do to a female? Tie up her tubes? Remove her ovaries?
You're going to put her in jail.
What are you accomplishing by that?
You are deterring other females from attempting the same thing. We're talking about children. I'm not down with this normalizing pedophilia, okay? I think that's BS.
You
are. That's what you're doing,
Excuse me. Okay, and who's taking care of her kids?
Put these people in jail. They got to be in jail, all of them.
Put them in jail. And yet, Ryan, when you went to school, look, he hung up.
But Curtis,
I wanted to ask Ryan, were you aware of male students who had had sex
with
their adult female teachers?
Of course.
Would you have wanted to see them all go to jail?
Okay, but let me put this question to you, Curtis. What is a school system supposed to do? Let's just say in this case, there's a female teacher that's engaging in threesomes, foursomes with players on the football team. These are things that have actually happened. What is a school district supposed to do? Slap her on the hand and say, don't do that?
You get fired. You get mental health counseling. You may get some prison time.
But Ryan was right.
You don't get for murder.
Okay, you're right about that.
You don't get that for killing somebody.
But who says that there's a mental health component? Maybe the person is just freaky like that and enjoys doing things like that.
No, I think there's a
so there has to be a mental health.
So
why does a correction officer decide to sleep with inmates that can't do anything for her?
That's adults. That's a little different.
Generally, it's adults. Right. Some of these young men are 16.
Let's go to Steve, who's calling from Connecticut. Welcome to Curtis and Dominic Carter here on WABC. Steve?
Hey, Curtis. Honor to speak with you, Curtis. Hey, I had a friend who was involved in this in ninth grade, art teacher in the closet at the back of the room. Anyway, he loved every second of it, talked about it all the time, bragged about it all the time. And in fact, years later, he used to go visit her in Manhattan. So, I couldn't agree with you more. To put teachers in jail for this is crazy. Get them some counseling or whatever. But it didn't hurt this kid whatsoever.
Real people are winning real.
What the hell happened there, man?
See what happens when you're... Who's calling you right now?
It's a freaking bill collector, Steve. Hold on one second.
Don't answer it. This man answered it for real.
I told you before, when I get paid, pal, you'll get paid. I'm on the radio, and I'm just going to leave it at that. I'm introducing you to Mr. Click.
Curtis, why did you have to answer that call while we're on the air?
But let me ask you a question, because Steve, you're still on the line,
right, Steve? Folks don't understand. You really answered the call.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Steve. Help me.
Now, could you have imagined under today's standards that teacher would have been thrown into jail, maybe doing 5-7 years?
I think it's nuts. I think it's crazy. This kid was he put a smile on this kid's face for years and years.
This conversation, guys, I'm sorry. This conversation is totally wrong. Curtis,
why is it wrong?
You and Steve, you're wrong on this. Because if a male teacher has sex with your 13-year-old daughter. What makes it different?
Totally different.
What makes it different?
Totally different.
Because it's your little girl? What makes it different?
Completely different than a young man having sex with his female teacher. I have yet to see men who have been damaged. Now, I've met young ladies who have been damaged and scarred by male teachers who have preyed on them.
So let me make sure I got this right here.
Yes.
So if you're a male teacher and you do this to a female student, you should go to jail. But if you're a woman teacher and you do it to a male student, you should just get counseling and maybe lose your job.
You lose your job, get counseling, and you might get a little prison time. Or like so many get, it's like home incarceration so they could watch their kids. Like, who's going to be taking care of their kids?
But you don't support the home incarceration for the male teacher.
No.
They should go to jail.
Absolutely. 1-800-848-WABC.
Live, local, on it. Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa.
77 WABC.
To the phones we go. Dominic Carter in the house. It's Carmen in New Jersey. Welcome to WABC, Carmen.
Hey, how you doing? Curtis and Dominic. Good people. I like listening to you. Good guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. My daughter was, she got caught up in that. She was 22, and she was at the end of her teaching, getting ready to get her teacher's license, was observing classes, befriended these younger kids, and her boyfriend had broke up with her at the time, and she ended up sleeping with this almost 16-year-old kid, which was wrong, no question about it. You know, I don't know, but she made a mistake. They gave her 3 years. She ended up doing a year. But part of the thing was is that the parents seeing the text, she was trying to, like, you know, let the kid down easy because he was, like, all happy and, well, you know, all his best glory, which kind of was wrong, you know. She kind of, you know, she's a hot-looking girl, my daughter. You look on her line, you see she's the second-hottest teacher, you know, that did this stupid stuff.
But really, now question.
They end up suing. Part of it was the parents figured they knew they were going to get money out of this. So that's why they turned her in. I mean, the kid, that's how she got caught. The parents turned her in because they knew they were going to get money. Even the judge had said it. The judge said, is there a civil suit going on here? Hey, yeah. You know, but also the judge has said that, you know, even though you succumb to the kid's advances, we still have an obligation to deter. But, you know, so she's on, you know, lifetime parole. Never could teach again, obviously.
Is she labeled a sex offender?
Yes, absolutely, yes.
And how much actual time did she do in a woman's correctional facility?
Well, there's only one women's correctional facility in New Jersey that's down in, I forget where the heck it was, down by Flemington. And she did a year. She gave her three, but she did 1 year. They let her out of parole.
And what is she doing now, Carmen?
She's actually now, she was working, she got a good job at a company, but now she's a stay-at-home mom. She just had a baby. Got married, has a baby.
And how did her husband deal with the fact that she had done time for having sex with one of her male students?
Well, actually, it was the same guy that broke up with her for another woman, and they ended up getting back together. So it was a difficult time.
And so for you, and Carmine, for you and your wife, did this take you by surprise? Were you shocked when you learned about it?
Yeah. It was. I was mad. You know, all the schooling and everything else, and, you know, she did something stupid, but was I surprised that she would, because she was 22, but, you know, not mature, you know what I mean? So I wasn't really that surprised.
Did she ever get any kind of mental counseling or anything?
Well, that's mandatory. Yeah. Mandatory. Yeah.
Because I would have to figure out, like you said, she was immature, not acting her age. That
right.
It was something that all of a sudden attracts her to somebody who was like 16 at the time. She knows that's double trouble. She's
right.
Sane and sober, and yet she goes down that path anyway. And so she had incarceration for a year. She had counseling. She's back on her feet. She's married. She has a newborn baby. That, to me, sounds like the way to go. There's some punishment. There's counseling. But I'm thinking if she had already, let's say, had children and was a single mother, would we want to send her to prison? Because you would have had to take care of her kids, right?
Yeah, well, I think every situation is different. I mean, she was 22. It was a 40-year-old with a 16-year-old or something. You know better. At 22, I don't think you really know. They don't teach this stuff in college. They don't really teach that.
No, you're right, but I appreciate you being so open with us and discussing the situation that obviously didn't just impact your daughter, but impacted your entire family.
It's tough. It's very, very tough.
But that seemed to me the balance. You get a little bit of prison time, you get counseling, you get back up on your feet, you can't teach any longer, you're obviously, you know, you're on a sex registry list for the rest of your life. So clearly it's not just a... You know, you're not walking through a turnstile justice system there. You're feeling some pain. But anyway, on that note, let's get news headlines and updates from Ken Duffy.
He knows the city. Live, local, on it. Curtis Sliwa, 77 WABC.
For people like Justin B. Love, our producer and phone screener, the Alabama kid, like all millennial and hipster invaders who came into our area, when they were growing up, many of them couldn't wait for the Christmas holiday season to come so that they could go to Radio City Music Hall and see the Rockettes' performance and the annual Christmas show. Have you ever seen that, Dominic Carter?
I believe once or twice, but they're quite good. It's a good show.
I've actually gone now 2 years back-to-back, belly-to-belly. I hadn't seen the show since I was a kid myself when my mother took myself and my two sisters, Alita and Maria. But for some strange reason, my two youngest sons, Carter, who's age 9, Hunter, who's age 6, they want to go every year and see. It's pretty much the same show. It's a very good show. And we had an opportunity after the first time I brought him because the guy was sort of like the head of the union crew that puts together the staging and stuff. I happened to be a former guardian angel. So he said, hey, would you like to see the Rockettes afterwards? Yeah. So we went in the back there and the Rockettes came out. They were all dressed up. They were going home. And the boys had a chance to talk to the Rockettes, which was great. But we find out that Harvey Weinstein had a chance to talk to the Rockettes on a regular basis, not after they were finished and they were dressed up and ready to head home or wherever they were going for dinner or drinks. But James Dolan, who owns Radio City Music Hall and the Rockettes, in addition to the Knicks and the Rangers and Madison Square Garden, which is right below us, gave him a regular entree to go perv on the Rockettes in their dressing room. So here's Harvey Weinstein. We know him. He's a perpetual perv. We've seen all, heard all the stories of late. And James Dolan was letting him go back after performances time and time again to perv out the women.
But wait a minute. You're making a huge leap here. One very successful businessman who owns a sports team. The conversation probably went like this. I'd like to go back and just say hello to the Rockettes. You're making the assumption that Dolan knew specifically what was going on.
Who didn't know about Harvey Weinstein?
You're right about that. Because oftentimes, when it hits public, it means that it's finally hitting public. Those of us that cover this stuff for a living, you hear the rumors from day one about a person's background. And so you may know that some things are true, some things are untrue, but this has been so widely reported that everybody had to know what
time
it was.
Let's say it was one time, okay? One time only.
And this sounds just like a story, by the way, of the current occupant in terms of the White House going backstage.
Well, beauty pageants, right. Would walk into dressing rooms where... Right.
And these are his own words.
Right, the young ladies and the women who were participating in Donald Trump's beauty contest would be virtually buck naked, and he'd be walking through. He'd have guests with him, you know, male guests, and they'd be oogling, eyeing the young ladies. There's no doubt about it. But in this case, apparently Harvey Weinstein was a regular visitor backstage for the Rockettes, courtesy of James Dolan. But we now know that this guy was like perving nonstop, 24/7, 365. His brother Bob, who grew up with him in Flushing, Queens, when both of them were nebbishy, schlubby, you know, just average everyday guys, who probably would have gone to Baruch College, like our own Sid Rosenberg, and had been accountants with a number two pencil, and women probably wouldn't have paid them any mind. you know, they would have just ended up settling down, having families maybe out in five towns in Long Island, right? Instead of becoming the big mogul movie producers that they became and dominating both cults, both Hollyweird and New York in terms of movie production. It turns out his brother, who has been highly critical of him of late, trying to save his own neck and Miramax's neck. Oh, I knew this about my brother. You know, he's creepy. He was a perv, whatever. Turns out he was perving on people himself within the confines of Miramax. One woman has emerged, and you know what's going to happen. One woman emerges, and others will follow. Amanda Siegel, an executive producer of the short-lived Spike series The Mist, who has claimed that Bob Weinstein propositioned her and repeatedly asked her out to private dinners over a period of 3 months last year, and of not stopping until she got a lawyer. So the guy was like nonstop. He just would not leave this woman alone. Now, you may say it's in their genetics, you know, it's like brother. I think it's probably traced to something that happened with their mother because they are both like first class Mama Luke's mama boys. But it's like endless. It's over and over and over, and it just doesn't stop. And the question is, has anyone in Hollywood or here in New York who uses casting couches, whether it's for young starlets, females, or males, you know, hoping to climb the success ladder and find fame and fortune either on a Broadway stage or in a TV production, or even in an industrial film, you know, to start out with, and then obviously in the big screen. Have they learned a lesson from this, or will this too pass, and then business just goes back to the way it was?
What do you honestly think? We both know it's the latter. You might become a more sophisticated in your approach, but this is not going to change much. You know that, Curtis. It may be a different way of going about it, and it's disgusting to think that because you have money and power and you can decide careers. But this is not the first time you and I have seen things like this. It just became public. That's the only difference. And maybe to the disgusting degree of come on. We could both, if we were not on air right now, we could both ramble off 5 to 10 names of men that are close to doing the same exact thing. And are happily married with wife and children.
Yes. There's no doubt about that. But now they're enablers. And that's where I was this morning. You heard Bob Brown's broadcast at the top of the news hour.
How was that news conference?
It was great. Today? Although you weren't in attendance. You dissed me and dismissed me. I was expecting to see a camera from our end there.
Right, from our end. But I'm Juan Menendez. The moment we're off the air, I am flying literally back to Newark to report on the Menendez.
That's another perv there. So, and his enabler, his Medici, infamous Dr. Melgen.
But nothing's been proven. We'll see what the jury decides in this case, but Menendez. But we can talk about that another time.
Today, I was outside One Hogan Plaza, the entrance to the offices of the Manhattan District Attorney's Office, who is under fire for protecting Harvey Weinstein because he should have been charged. You heard the tape of that aspiring Italian starlet who got wired up like a Christmas tree by the NYPD sex unit. The goods, they had the goods. They brought it to Cy White Shoes Vance, Manhattan District Attorney. He decided no bill of goods. We now learn that he took from Weinstein's lead defense criminal attorney, Abramowitz, who had originally been his partner in a law firm, meaning Cy Vance's partner, $30,000 in a political contribution. David Boies, another of Weinstein's attorneys, he took $10,000. We now find out that he's taken money from the firm that represented Mayor Bill de Blasio in the allegations of pay for play, sizable donations that they bundled for him. We found out that Benjamin Braffman, who represented Khan, remember, of the International Monetary Fund, who was accused of fondling the woman who came into his hotel room, remember, to clean up the room, and then he exposed himself and tried to have sex with her. And that went away in addition to Sanford Rubinstein, the slip and fall lawyer, whose own sexual harassment case went away after Benjamin Braffman made sizable donations to the reelection effort of Cy Vance.
But why are you looking at me like that? You know what time it is. You've been around the body politic in this city for a long time. You know what happens to pay to play in terms of, and I'm only talking about right now, what's legal. What's legal?
Right, but think of this. He is running unopposed on November 7th.
They often are.
$1 million he has in a campaign war trust. What's he using that for? He's continuing to accept donations from attorneys that have both civil and criminal business before the Manhattan District Attorney's
office. But you're acting like this is new.
No, I'm not. But I'm saying this is extraordinarily egregious because now we're learning all of these.
Right. That's what you say. I say point to any district attorney.
Okay.
And follow the money.
So what I did originally today was not just complain about it. I want to give the residents of Manhattan County voters a choice on November 7th because the way it is now, it'll be a coronation for Cy Vance. It'll be a third term, no competition. So I was out there with Mark Fleener, who is a former Brooklyn district attorney who prosecuted, if you remember, the Asian officer in the case, the Gurney case, where he was in the stairwell at the Pink Housing Project, shot him, and then didn't come to his aid with his partner. Got a guilty verdict from
the jury. Ken Thompson.
Right. Ken Thompson was in charge at
the
time.
Who's now deceased.
But Mark Fleetner was the lead prosecutor. I felt did a great job in the three-week trial, although eventually a judge determined that Peter Liang, the officer that I had mentioned, would get only 5 years probation and 800 hours of community service.
But I want to ask you this directly. Yeah. This Harvey Weinstein stuff. You're not telling me that you're surprised by any of this.
I'm not saying I'm surprised, but now that's come out, all the other major cases in which attorneys just brought checks to basically get their clients freed. That's what it was. A get out of jail pass. You give me a check for my campaign in which no one's running against me.
And you're shocked.
Not shocked, but that's why we've got to write in this candidate, Mark Fleetner, and make sure that Cy Vance knows he's not running unopposed.
When you hire Ben Braffman, you used his name, and you cut him a large check of a retainer, what do you think most of that money is? Most of it's going to his retainer fee, but no questions asked. You don't ask any questions. He does what he has to do, and presto. You think that Braffman is the greatest lawyer to walk on ground.
All right, but now that it's been exposed, you would agree it's got to be stopped. It's got to be stopped. You cannot allow DAs to accept contributions from attorneys who have business in the district attorney's office.
And who's going to change it?
Oh, it can be changed.
Wait, who's going to change it?
You got a New York
Albany?
State. You
wait,
have
wait,
a New,
who's
no,
going
to
no. change it?
You
Albany?
Have a New York State
wait,
Constitutional Convention
right.
that's on the ballot. That's one of the reasons you have to vote for the New York State Constitution and vote yes, because
and
it's the only way to change this corruption.
And do you really think Albany and others are going to allow a constitutional convention to do exactly what you
the
just
voters.
Said?
The voters well,
right,
will.
Right.
By
right.
voting yes on November 7th.
Good luck with that.
Well, I'm promoting it, and I was out there outside of the district attorney's office calling for his head that he needs to go back to Seattle where he came from and sleep with the fishes on Pike Street. 1-800-848-WABC. To the phones we go. Dominic Carter in the house. It's Pete in Queens. Welcome to WABC, Pete.
Curtis, how are you today? Thanks for taking the call. Curtis, I'm 100% with you with Cy Vance. I wish I could have stood alongside of you today in front of his office. I'd like to know when you're going to go again. And I want to see this guy taken out of office.
Now, can you imagine Pete and Dominic Carter, the chutzpah, that he's under fire, he's under siege nationally now because of the Weinstein revelations, but also everything else that has come out, that he has appointed his own commission to investigate himself?
Absolutely wrong.
And you would think, where is the U.S. Attorney Kim on this, or Eric Schneiderman, the Attorney General, who always wants to investigate Trump from a different party? Maybe he ought to be investigating Cyrus White Shoes Vance, a fellow Democrat.
Good luck with that.
Well, why? You're the reporter. Why don't you ask Schneiderman? Ask U.S. Attorney Kim of the Southern District, huh?
I will.
Because you know what they're going to respond to you with. By introducing you to Mr. Click on the phone.
I love you, man.
No, I don't go that way, Dominic. I do not go that way.